Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingEarhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast. Jim Buckley is a prolific author of nonfiction for young readers, with more than 150 books to his credit and still typing. He is the author of more than a dozen titles in the New York Times bestselling Who Was biography series, including the Wright brothers, Milton Hershey, Betsy Ross, Jules Verne, and Blackbeard. Buckley has written more than 30 DK readers on a wide variety of topics, plus two recent long-form bios of Adolf Hitler and Bonnie and Clyde for Aladdin Books. For spring 2019, he created the first book in a new series for Aladdin, a bio of astronaut Michael Collins. Buckley is the co-author of Time Inc., Liberty Street's XYZ series, and wrote and produced the Animal Planet Animal Atlas for Liberty Street. A former editor at Sports Illustrated and the National Football League, he lives in Santa Barbara, California, where he runs a successful book-producing company. Tonight, on the 77th episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, Jim joins us via Zoom to discuss his groundbreaking book, Amelia Earhart, Pioneer of the Sky, a part of the Show Me History series. Jim gives us his thoughts on the book's creation and unique format, his ideas of making Amelia relatable to the next generation of young readers, and why he believes Amelia's legacy should live on for continued generations to come. Before we get started, or as we get started here, the first question I always ask everybody out of the gate is to tell me a little bit about your education, your professional background. So can I ask you to do the same thing for me?
Well, first of all, Chris, thanks so much for having me on today. I really appreciate being a part of what you're doing. I'm just very impressed with everything I've seen about Chasing Earhart so far. You seem to have a real dedication for it. So I'm happy to be able to contribute a little tiny part of it. We're going to be talking today about my graphic nonfiction book, Amelia Earhart, which is part of a series we created for Portable Press in San Diego. These are the first graphic nonfiction biographies of this kind that we've seen done for kids, and we were really excited to include Amelia as one of the first of the series. My background getting into this is I've been writing books for children, nonfiction books for young readers for about 20 years now. I came into book publishing after a career in magazines, working for Sports Illustrated, the National Football League, and other places. And I started a company in 2000 that creates and produces books for children, almost all nonfiction. Sports is a specialty of ours, but we have done science and history and nature. We've done animal books. We've done a lot of reference books. And this is our first graphic nonfiction work, and we're really excited about how it turned out. And so having done so many biographies, it was kind of a natural move for me to go into a biography series in this new graphic nonfiction format.
Yeah, and that's a good segue into you touched on a little bit how you were excited to be able to use Amelia as sort of one of the opening figures for the graphic novel series. Can you talk a little bit about maybe your first early impressions of Amelia Earhart? Do you remember any early memories of the first time you might have heard the name or kind of experienced her as a kid or even growing up?
Well, I have to say I don't immediately recall where she first entered my consciousness. I'm sure it was when I was a younger reader. I was very into history. I was very excited about American history, especially when I was a young reader. And I'm sure she was a part of that discussion. Where she comes into play really well here for us is her continued appeal to young people. In fact, this is a story that happened 70, 80 years ago in some cases, but it still has a lot of relevance today. And that was what was really important for us with the book, was to make sure that we picked people whose stories were not only exciting and dramatic and could be told in a very visual way, but that had some relevance to what's going on in the world today. So just as so many young readers are focused today on looking for heroes, looking for people who they can look up to, looking for people they can be inspired by, Amelia was a natural fit for that. She hit a lot of the buttons you'd want to hit in a series like this. She certainly was dramatic, lots of great, amazing feats. She was a woman doing things when women were not allowed to do a lot of things. And that certainly is a very important topic for young readers to hear, both boys and girls, for them to hear and read about. And for this series, we already know that she's popular for kids to read about, so this was a great way for us to tell her story in a format using the comic book graphic novel format in a way that we think will bring in more readers to understand more about her story. But as you say, she's somebody who is a touchstone for every generation, whether we learned about her when we were kids or whether we're learning about her now. It's going to be great, I think, to have this book out there and basically start a whole new generation of Amelia Earhart fans who will then, of course, watch your movie and be even more bigger fans.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you talked about sort of kind of appealing to children and using the graphic novel format, because obviously that's a really big thing right now. So let's kind of get into that format a little bit, because so the name of the book, and of course we're gonna plug the book at the end. We'll have everything in the show notes for tonight's episode, but it's the Show Me History series, Amelia Earhart, Pioneer of the Sky. I want to ask you a little bit about the way you guys choose to do the format, because you have Libby and you have Sam, and basically, without giving away too much of the book, because we want to kind of have readers go out there and pick up a copy, but who are Libby and Sam? Can you kind of explain how you've related those two characters, because they're icons of, you know, on their own right?
Right, absolutely. Well, one of the things that's interesting about a biography series is that you need to have, especially for young readers, a big part of telling a life story, especially of a person who lived in a time unfamiliar to kids. So this is in the 1910s, 20s, and 30s. A big part of what we do, and I do this in all biographies I write. I write a lot of books in the Who Was series, which is very popular at Penguin Books, Who Was series. So a lot of what we do is it's context. We need to give the young reader the context of what's going on. So why is it such a big deal that Amelia Earhart broke these barriers? I mean, kids today get on an airplane and it's, you know, Captain Judy and Captain Jane piloting the giant aircraft. It's not a big deal for kids today. So they needed to understand the context. So a lot of what we do with these books is to set up context. Sam and Libby, in this case, who are the narrators of the entire series, they appear in all the books in the Show Me History series. And Sam and Libby are there as the guides. They're there to help the kids move through the story, to speak directly to the audience. They break the fourth wall and speak right to the kids who are reading the book, and to the grown-ups who read the book too. It's not just for kids. And it was a great way for us to have a voice, because as authors, when I write a nonfiction book in a narrative format without all the illustrations, my voice is in there. I need to come in and be the voice of context to set the stage, so that when I did a book on Milton Hershey. So when Milton Hershey, you know, puts out his first chocolate bar, I'm the one who's telling the story of what was going on. In graphic nonfiction, the characters tell the story. As we know with any comic book, dialogue is 90% of writing the story. So a lot of this was kind of like writing a screenplay, because a lot of it would be giving direction to the artist. In this case, Kelly Tindall from Canada did a fantastic job. Super happy to have Kelly on board. And so a lot of the script for me as a writer was not just to come up with the dialogue. And we have a mix of dialogue in the book. Some of it is actual words that were from Amelia Earhart's writings or interviews. Came right from her mouth onto the page, speeches she gave. But a lot of it is made up so that we can tell the story in the way we need to tell it. But as you said, Sam and Libby are the guides. They're the touchstones that work throughout the book to make sure kids have the context for what's going on and help us step by step carry on chronologically through the story.
Yeah, and what I really love, Jim, about the way you wrote the story and what you included in the story was you talk a lot about the little things, and you kind of focus on Amelia Earhart's childhood and some of the things that she might have had to overcome. You talk about the roller coaster incident, which is one of the more famous incidents, actually took place about 5 or 6 blocks from where I'm sitting right now. You talk about her hunting rats with her rifle when she's a kid. You talk about her father's drinking problem and how that affected her. You talk about her moving around and going through this process, her experiences as a nurse. You go through this whole process before she ever even really kind of gets into her career in flight, where she starts breaking all the records. And that's sort of the area that everybody knows about. How important is it for you as a writer and relating to children to sort of talk about those experiences with Amelia as a child and sort of how those experiences maybe built the foundation for the legend that she would become?
Well, that's a good question. And obviously the answer is because the readers can't relate to a 35-year-old woman climbing in an airplane. They can relate to a kid playing in the backyard with their friend and building a roller coaster by themselves. So a lot of it is to create a sense of relationship between the reader and the subject. And the best way to do that when you're writing for kids is to talk about those people as kids. There's some really great, you know, series out there that basically tell a story of presidents as kids and athletes as kids. So we in the series, all the books, start with as young as we can, telling as much detail as we can. And as you said, a lot of the details that come through connect and relate to things that happened later in her life. So was she a daredevil as a youth? Yeah, kind of she was. So that gave her the context later on to be brave enough to try things for the first time. Was she independent as a kid? Well, yeah, we saw that. And part of it was she moved a lot of different places and had to be on her own and had to take care of herself. Okay, great. That became something we could see her doing as an adult later. It doesn't make sense as much later unless you set the foundation for it early in the book. And you know, I want to credit, first of all, that mentioned, but by the way, that you know, all this research was done by others, and I'm riding on the shoulders of many, many other people. Many of the books I'm sure you all have read, and you even had some of the authors on your show who are quoted in your documentary. So my job was to take in all the worldly, really great work that has been done by a lot of really talented, hardworking researchers and biographers and distill it down and look for the nuggets that, as you say, the details that relate best to kids. And so that's you know, my expertise is pulling out the nuggets from all the other experts and retelling the story in a way that young people can relate and understand to it. So I just hate to make it sound like I went out and found all this information. This was all really great work that had been done by others, but I hope that we were able to kind of reconfigure it in a way that creates something new.
Yeah, no, I really love that because, you talk about really kind of areas of her life that was really obscure or that were really obscure, like the first flight with Nita Snook when she crashed and she mentioned very famously that she had to try to make herself ready for the reporters that were going to come. There's certain aspects of that we've talked about. This book really is, as I read through it the first couple of times, you know, when every time I prep to talk to an author or writer, when I read their book, I usually read it twice. And the first time I read it is just kind of for pure enjoyment, for I don't take notes, I don't do anything like that. The second time is my note-taking, time that I go through the book. And what I really noticed about this, other than just the obscure stories and the kind of things that you kind of picked out to and kind of included in here to tell the story, is this is really a companion piece for Vanished Amelia Earhart, which is the second podcast that we do. Before we started getting into the jury trial case with all the varying theories and things we're talking about right now, the first seven parts of the show really all talked about her being born in Atchison and all the different areas that hit her life and the things that you're talking about and relating to children here. So I think this is a fantastic introductory book for kids who want to sort of get a snapshot of Amelia Earhart's life and her legacy and her impact and a little bit of the mystery of the disappearance without overloading them too much. I think that's really, you've really done a great job with that.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's nice to hear you say it that way, because that's really the goal for all the Show Me History books, is these are only 96 pages. They're written for young people. They're never going to cover every aspect of a human being's life, no matter how many panels we pack into each page. We really went into this series with the idea that we're going to hit the high points of a person's life to make sure that the most important stories and the most important themes that we're trying to get across are present on all the pages. But we know we can't tell the entire story, so I'm glad to see it worked in this case. The other books in the series, for instance, we did Abraham Lincoln, Alexander Hamilton, and I also wrote Martin Luther King Jr. So those people lived incredible lives, filled with incident, filled with story, filled with things that happened. So again, our job was to kind of try and hit the highlights. We looked at the book at the 96 pages as basically having anywhere from 7 to 12 kind of, you know, episodes almost, you might say. As I said, it was kind of a lot of it was like writing a screenplay. You could also compare it to writing maybe a limited series that, you know, that they're doing on, you know, Netflix and other places like now. So we had like a, you know, thought of this as a 10 episode limited series. So you don't tell the whole life, but if you can tell 10 episodes really well, it strings together to make a great story.
You know, and that's a Yeah, that you make an excellent point. And I want to sort of jump to the end of the book. I mean, obviously, we want kids to go out and pick up this book. We want parents to go out and pick up this book and read it with your kids. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of it. It's something the kids can read on their own, but it's something that parents and kids can read that will keep the kids engaged. But I want to talk about the ending of the book, because you do sort of talk about the disappearance and the mystery and kind of what happened at the end of her life and kind of how that may or may not have ended. And I like that you sort of end the story with no one really knows, you know, whatever happened to Amelia Earhart. And there's a beautiful shot that the artist drew of her sort of flying into the sunset, which is kind of what I always imagined she did when I was a third grader. That's kind of by the naivete of a third grader. There but you go. you sort of have a little bit of an epilogue at the end where you kind of touch on the disappearance, you touch on stuff. You don't, you know, obviously don't pick a theory or anything like that, but you kind of give like an overview, a snapshot, if you will, sort of in the same vein you did with the rest of the book. Can you talk about the decision-making and trying to do that and kind of leaving sort of it open-ended, you know, for the audience that you're trying to tell the story to?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the things we want to tell kids, and this is a sort of a constant theme of all the work I'm trying to do these days, is to understand the difference between facts and opinions, or facts and theories. And there aren't enough provable facts that I could find, others of your research may disagree with, that I could find, that I could say with all certainty to a kid that we're absolutely sure this happened. Well, we know she took off. We know she was born this day. We know she, you know, had brown hair, whatever hair. We know things, but we don't know that. And I'm holding up quote marks you can't see on the podcast. We don't know that. So a part of what we're trying to say is that, as we have Libby say, many people are still looking. We're not 100% sure. But what was kind of interesting is we'd finished the book, the manuscript, and in fact, most of the drawings had been done, the first stage, the pencil drawings. And then the information came out that is in on the last page of the book about the bones that were found on what I guess is once was Gardner Island, those bones that they found a long time ago, but then new research, you know, kind of re-looked at the data. And that happened like as we were finishing the book. So it was not a conscious plan from day one to include that, but we were really fortunate and happy to have something happen while we were writing the book that we could really have this book be as, you know, as up to date as it could be. Previously, the book had really pretty much ended with, we really don't know. There's lots of theories. In fact, we have a whole page that, in sort of cartoon form of some of the famous theories that have come up over the years. But to be able to update the book with the latest information on that last page. That's why that's there. It really was kind of random timing. You know, if we'd done this book 2 years ago, I wouldn't have ended the book the same way.
Yeah, you know, and what I really like about the theories, you know, and this is just a question I had as I was kind of reading through the book and kind of wrapping it up and ending it, is it sort of, are you, when you're writing, is it in the back of your mind that you want to sort of inspire people to want to learn more about these subjects, in this case, Amelia Earhart? So you kind of put, you know, you put the snapshots of the theories on there, and you know, we live in the internet age now. It's a quick Google search away. You can hit Amelia Earhart, have a billion websites come up. Is that sort of your intention as a writer, to sort of have your work in this book for Amelia Earhart in this case be the spark to sort of let kids kind of start their own journey and research into this woman?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. All of the books that we do for kids are a starting point. They are absolutely not the final word on any topic that we do. Whether it's a biography, whether it's a book about animals, whether it's a book about the space station, there's no possible way in a relatively short book aimed at young people and you know, keeping the tone appropriate and the contents appropriate and the context, trying to fill in the context of what's going on, there's no possible way we could be comprehensive enough in this book. In fact, two pages after the final design, you know, after the final cartoon page, two pages afterward, it's a whole page called Find Out More. We list books and websites. We have video, and in our reprint, we'll include your site. That's absolutely the case with all of our books. This is a starting point. We want kids to finish the book, whether it's watching Alexander Hamilton, you know, get shot by Aaron Burr and then realizing, hey, wait, there's a big musical about him. I can go listen to the music and I can make that part of my life. Or whether it's reading about Dr. King's story, which we end with mentions of some of the civil rights heroes who come after him who are still at work today, and noting that the fight goes on. So all of these books are starting points. In the case of Amelia Earhart, the fact that, you know, for many people around the world, the focus is not on her life, but on her disappearance. And I specifically did not make the disappearance much more than the last few pages of the book. That was one decision I made, because as cool as it is to talk about, a lot, like I said, a lot of what we want to deal with are facts, and there just aren't enough actual provable facts for me to do a whole big long section for kids. So I basically said, let's focus on her life. Let's focus on what we know. Let's be inspired by it. Let's learn about this great journey she took. If you want to go out and research the disappearance and look into all the theories, you know, go for it. You know, that's exciting. Please do. We mentioned a few of them in the book, captured by the Japanese, stranded on various islands. You know, we mentioned them briefly, but we don't really, as you say, we want them to go further. So yeah, that was definitely part of it. It's like, let's get started, kids, on a journey. We'll tell you a lot, everything we know, and now it's up to you to go find out more.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I love that it sort of turns into really kind of a reference textbook in the last couple of pages, like you mentioned. You have the Amelia Earhart timeline. You have the, you know, the find out more page, which I love. You have the glossary, which really talks about some of the key terms in the book that people, a child might read and think, well, what's a hanger? You know, you can kind of find out.
Well, the education market is a really big part of any publishing operation for children. And we had those in there very specifically because we want to assist teachers who might be using this book in their classrooms, or we want to assist kids who are using this book as a basis for a report who want more information. And so timelines and glossaries and find out more information, sidebars, that kind of extra information is always really, really important to have. You'll find it in all of the really good kids books that are out there. Almost all the books that we produce here at my company, we try to include that information because, as you say, it's the door to the next stage of your investigation. So you've opened the door with Show Me History, and here's some other doors you can go through.
Yeah, and one thing I want to point out too for the listeners that are going to be hearing this particular episode of the show, one thing I really love and just really made me beam is there's another page at the end of the book, Famous Flying Women, and we've been talking about this for a long time. There was never just one, and I think Amelia Earhart obviously might have been, you know, the face and the sort of the catalyst for a lot of that, but you talk about Harriet Quimby, you talk about Jackie Cochran, who was the founder of the WASP program and one of Amelia's dear friends, and if you want to go there, possibly ties into one of the theories about her disappearance. You talk about Jerry Mock and Emily Warner and all these wonderful people. And I want to applaud you for that, because there are so many people that if you say women in aviation, they say Amelia Earhart. And I say, well, that's one, sure, but they don't know Florence Klingensmith. They don't know Ruth Elder. They don't know Ruth Nichols, all these people, women you mentioned. I love that you've kind of expanded that universe, so to speak, if you want to call it that, sure. There are a lot more than just, there was never just one. And I think that's a great little page to actually kind of sidebar to put in the book as well.
You mentioned right at the top, you asked what was my, you know, my original knowledge of Amelia Earhart. Well, I'd always had, you know, like most Americans, a working knowledge of Amelia Earhart, but I learned more page probably than I did the rest of the book, because we absolutely wanted to make sure they understood that. And I have to say, that's one thing that Amelia was very strong in talking about. And we mentioned that we have a couple of places in the book where she talks about other flying women and encouraging other women to fly. It was a very big part of her life. And so we were really happy to be able to include that. And as you say, this can be a way for kids to take off and find out more about other women who were breaking their own barriers, fighting their own fights, right alongside Amelia Earhart. And she had the fortune to connect with Mr. Putnam, who was such a great help to her career, but also she, you know, by disappearing became a bigger legend than any of them could ever have been.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a good segue into sort of wrapping up the interview tonight and kind of talking about the last question I always ask everybody that ever sits down on the show with me. And it's really sort of a two-part question. And the first part of the question, I'll ask you this separately, is why is it, why, in your opinion, I know we've touched on it a little bit tonight, but why, in your opinion, does the world sort of not want to let go of this story? Is it just because she disappeared and we don't know? What is your opinion on why the world just can't seem to let go? I mean, every time you mention it, the bones come out, the Nikumaroro bones, the Jaluit dock photo. Anytime something comes out, the story about Buka and their plane possibly being a Buka, it sets the world on fire. We talk about that all the time. Why do you think the world just can't seem to let go of the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan?
Well, you said it right from the start. The very first word you mentioned in the question is story. What are the things that every story has to have? Story has to have a beginning. Well, we know her beginnings. She grew up in a kind of a rough and tumble life. She had some problems early in her life. Story has a middle. We know the story's middle. She crossed the Atlantic. She became a world famous. She made other incredible flights. She was caught on film telling people about her amazing flights. She had started around the world. The story doesn't have an ending. Stories without endings, automatically, what do people search for? We want an ending. We almost, in this case, it's been going on so long, almost don't want an ending because it's more fun to talk about. But every story has to have an ending. And so when stories end, no one talks about them as much anymore. This story is still talked about because there's no ending. Organizations like yours, you know, keep it alive because you are searching for the ending. You're searching for that closure. You're searching for that way for all of us to say, okay, now I get it. Okay, now I know how it ended. I feel much better. Add in the fact that she was so unique. And so much as we talk about other flying women, she was still unique amongst them in her her positivity, her attitude, her outgoing nature, her ability to get attention, which obviously turns into one of the reasons she was able to do some of it. So combine all that, add in, frankly, her connection to the early age of aviation, which continues to have resonance even today. People look back on those early days of Lindbergh and flying in World War I in biplanes. That's still just such a built-in part of American culture as much as anything else. So add in all those mix of things with a story that doesn't have an ending and a big giant question mark, that's a no-brainer. It's a giant story until it's not a giant story.
Yeah, that's well put. Now, the very last question, and it's a good segue into the final question tonight, is, you know, and I'll kind of begin it with an anecdotal story. Since we live about 5 or 6 blocks away from the house that she grew up in, which is now the Amelia Earhart Birthplace Museum in Atchison, Kansas here.
Totally and cool.
Yeah, it's super cool to be a part of this town and to kind of be here. But one of the things I noticed when I first visited the house for the first time is if you go upstairs and you go to the bedroom that she kind of grew up in, you'll see that the museum staff there, the curator and some of the staff, actually puts letters on the bed that are still written to this day by young children to Amelia Earhart in hopes that she'll answer them 82 years after she disappeared. So there's still kids writing to this woman. And I thought that's the story. There's your legacy right there. That's power you can't buy. And I always think about that. And I always ask all of our guests, really to wrap up each interview, why does that happen, do you think? Why does she have such a special, unique connection to children and young kids and people that are like 18 and under? Why is she still inspiring people like astronaut Abby to be the first person on Mars and all these people that just pull all of this inspiration from this woman who vanished without a trace, essentially? Why do you think that she connects to people in general, and why do you think she connects to children in general after all these years?
Well, I think if she had come along 15 years earlier, it wouldn't have happened. If she'd come along 15 years later, we wouldn't be talking about her. She came along at just the right moment. She was filmed. People could see her talking. 15 years earlier, no one would have ever seen her talking. 15 years later, she would have been gobbled up in everybody talking. So it was at a time when people were able to connect to their heroes in ways that they never could before. You know, people loved Lincoln, but no one ever saw him on video, right? People got to see Amelia Earhart on their newsreels. They got to see her in person because she traveled everywhere. They got to hear her on the radio. They got to hear reports about her. And so that made it an instant connection to the population, and that has just carried on since. And the other reasons, I think, certainly are ones we kind of briefly touched on, was she checked so many boxes of things that connect over the generations. She did something really cool. Kids love airplanes. They love flying. The idea of flying to a 9-year-old is just the coolest thing. Maybe a little less so now than it was 30 years ago because it's so obvious, but it's still something you see with young kids, like, wow, check out that airplane. She was a woman doing something that women weren't supposed to do. It's still rare and unique. I mean, I think probably the number of really famous female astronauts is a good example of that. There's a handful. You know, it should be, by now, should it be 50-50? Yeah, it probably should be, but it's still a fraction of a percent. So doing something that's unique right off the bat. So you've got media, you've got a uniqueness, and like I said, the mystery. I think if everyone knew where she crashed, those letters wouldn't be written. But because in some young kid's mind, maybe she's still reading those letters. Maybe she's still able to be connected because she's not resting. She's not in one place where we know she is. And so why not write to her? Can't hurt.
Can't hurt. That's very, very true. Jim, before we get out of here tonight, can you give everybody a plug for the book? Can you tell us if you have a website, a Twitter, anything like that?
Absolutely. I'm very happy to do that. And thanks again for having me on today. And I really appreciate being able to tell everybody about our book, Show Me History. And it's available on Amazon and all of your local independent bookstores. It'll be for sale at most of the big box stores this summer, Costco and Sam's Club, places like that as well. It's part of a 4-book series, including Lincoln, Hamilton, and Dr. King. All the books are graphic nonfiction created by different artists. The artist for Amelia Earhart, I want to mention again, is Kelly Tindall. He did a fantastic job. I also want to mention John Rochelle at Comicraft, who created all the graphics and the beautiful typography throughout the book. And so it's really a team effort. Like any of Amelia's flights needed a team of people to come together, we brought a team together to create this book. And I was just the guy who did the typing, if you'll say. There is a really cool website that if you Google Portable Press and Show Me History. The Portable Press is the publisher there in San Diego. They've set up a really cool website that has a teacher's guide, a reading guide, has some excerpts, has covers of all the books, so you can find out more about the series that way. There's some interviews with me and my fellow writer, Mark Shulman, who created the books on Hamilton and Lincoln. So you can definitely go online and check those out. And again, really appreciate being here today. I hope everyone enjoys the book, and good luck in your search and your film.
The book is Amelia Earhart, Pioneer of the Sky. It's part of the Show Me History series. This has been Jim Buckley. Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure. We will have links to the book and everything you mentioned in the show notes tonight. I really appreciate you joining me.
Thanks again, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.